like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals. Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is veteran Greyhound advocate Don Goldstein, a member of the Board of Directors of Greyhound Rescue and Adoptions of Tampa Bay, or GREAT. Don has been rescuing and adopting greyhounds for more than 20 years. Pegged to April being National Adopt-a-Greyhound Month, we'll of course discuss with Don the virtues and joys of adopting a greyhound, but the conversation will also seek to address such significant topics as the dramatic number of deaths at tracks in Florida and elsewhere, and what can be done about it, including legislation considered as recently as yesterday, and we'll get an update on that. Don was at those hearings, so we'll discuss all of this and more when we speak of Don Goldstein in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in today's show, we'll hear one of my very favorite animal songs, chiefly because the artist in question is rolling into town, but I'm always happy to have an excuse to play this one, and to be a bit cryptic about it for now. Also later, when we reach Name That Animal Tune, we'll be offering as the prize a pass for a tour of Big Cat Rescue, the Tampa Sanctuary for Big Cats of All Stripes. Right now, though, let's hear an animal song. This is Was Not Was with What's Up Dog on Talking Animals.
Got this new pit bull terrier. Thing's better than a credit card. Went to the gas station the other day. Got a couple gallons of gas, some oil, spark plug, six pack. Man says that'll be $15.41. I say, well, goddamn, I forgot my wallet, but I did bring my credit card.
All right, that was Not Was with What Up Dog, a vintage animal tune to get us started this morning. Let's move now into our chat with Don, and with the reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting us at 813-433-0885. Let's welcome from Greyhound Rescue and Adoptions of Tampa Bay, Don Goldstein, back, in fact, to Talking Animals. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for returning. Some mindful and astute and great memory listeners might recall. A couple years ago, we did a roundtable all about greyhounds, and you were part of that panel. But it's just one-on-one today, which is great. We have all kinds of cool things to discuss, as we sort of alluded to at the beginning of the show. But I think really, since you have such kind of a long history with greyhounds that spans some 20 years, maybe you could sort of trace that history a little bit for us. When and how did that first greyhound enter your life, for example?
My wife and I had a rescue that was getting older. He was about 16 years old at the time, and we knew he didn't have a lot of legs left. And we were just looking around for another dog. We thought we'd maybe get one while he was still alive. We happened to be watching the Discovery Channel and saw a show about rescuing greyhounds, about greyhounds, rescued greyhounds as pets. Did some research and fell in love with the breed, and that was in 1992. We've had at least two greyhounds virtually the entire time, and right now I have three.
So apart apart from obviously being dog people and then seeing that thing, I mean, how steeped initially were you in the world of greyhounds and, of course, greyhound racing and you know, everything that sort of goes with that?
I was not at all. I mean, I grew up near a racetrack, and I had been to the races when I was a kid, when I was younger. But I really did not know much about them until we started that process and that research. We met a few and discovered what gentle, kind animals they are.
And I know you had told me beforehand your history with greyhounds involves adopting greyhounds in three different states. So Florida is obviously one of those states. What are the other two?
Virginia. We were living in Virginia. I was stationed at Coast Guard headquarters. I'm retired Coast Guard. And we were stationed in Washington, D.C. at the time. We adopted that our first greyhound from a group called National Greyhound Adoption Program out of Philadelphia. They're still around.
Oh, good.
Still going strong. We then were transferred to Texas. We adopted the next couple of them in Texas. And then, of course, we moved to here to Florida 13 years ago, and the last quite a few greyhounds we've adopted here.
So more than 20 years in then, you've adopted a number of greyhounds, obviously, and fostered several more. So what's special about greyhounds? What do you and your wife see in them that has led to this kind of extended love affair?
They're just gentle, kind souls. People may think that they're hyperactive because they picture them at racetracks, but people need to remember that those races last anywhere from 28 to 34 seconds, and they only do that every 3, 4, 5 days. The rest of the time, they are in cages, frankly, 2 foot by 3 foot by 3 foot cages. So they're very sedentary. They like to lay around. They like to cuddle. They're very, very affectionate animals. We just fell in love with them.
Well, that's probably leading us into where I guess one core of this conversation would be, because again, mindful that April is National Adopt a Greyhound Month, and with any luck, maybe we'll spark some people's interest in adopting the dogs. So
that would be wonderful.
Yeah. So more specifically, what's it like to live with a greyhound? I mean, obviously affectionate, you said, kind of like to hang out, lay low, relax, docile for the most part. What are some other virtues or things, you know, good and maybe challenging that we should know?
Well, our organization, we foster all of our dogs, meaning we take them into our homes when they come off of the track. We have them in our homes anywhere from 2 weeks to many months. So we learn their personalities. We learn their foibles, and some of them are really quite humorous. They have quite a sense of humor, some of them.
What would be an example, or how do they demonstrate that?
My wife and I recently adopted a young lady. We adopted her just before she turned 2. She's had some medical issues, but she's going to be fine now. And she bounces off of walls for about 40 seconds, of course, and then she lays down for the next two days. But she's just, when it's time for food, she just comes up and flops herself on the floor and starts talking to me. And then she gets my other two going too.
So if you're not getting the message, she'll make sure that you do one way or the other, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I got
absolutely.
You. Okay. Let me let folks know, by the way, in case you just tuned in, my guest is Don Goldstein on the board of directors of Greyhound Rescue and Adoptions of Tampa Bay, or GREAT. And he's been rescuing, as we've heard, and adopting greyhounds for more than 20 years. If you'd like to ask Don a question about greyhounds, life with greyhounds, racing, etc., or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. Okay, so let's get into some of the questions that I'm sure people have that are not as deeply hooked into the world of greyhounds. For example, I gather at least that it can be tricky, or depending, I guess, on the age of the kids, to bring a retired racing greyhound into a family that does have kids. Is it the key thing of how old the kids are, or what is the stance on that?
Yeah, primarily it's the age of the kids. Our organization has a general policy that we don't like to place greyhounds in homes with children younger than 6 years old. And that's primarily due to the kids, not the greyhounds. Greyhounds in general, almost all the time, are very, very good with kids. But if children haven't been around a large greyhound, and the females go 50 to 65 pounds, the males go 60 to 80 pounds. So these are large dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And if they haven't been around them, and you know, the dogs can react to poor behavior. So we try not to do that. We do make exceptions. If younger children have been around large dogs, know how to behave around large dogs, then we're more inclined to go
so
along
with
that.
So it's strictly a matter of experience with dogs, large dogs, whether it's greyhounds specifically or just large dogs, and just knowing that those kids know what to do, and more to the point, maybe know what not to do.
Exactly.
And then and then we're home free, it sounds like. Okay, so now I'm sure for a lot of people, the at least equal question might be cats. How does that work?
Actually, a majority of greyhounds are about 50-50, I guess, maybe slightly majority, are fine with cats and small animals. We call it cat testing. We have some of our volunteers who have cats, and we take our foster dogs over to their homes and see how they react to the cats in a home setting. So we know that, and sometimes it's a little challenging to find one for the right home with cats, but
yeah.
But we're almost always able to do that.
And is it just like, I guess, as with a lot of other animals and us humans as well, just sort of personality differences? Because it seems like racing greyhounds, the sort of the whole point of that world is the prey drive, at least for that 34 seconds or whatever you described, is juiced up to the max. So it would seem like if the cat's just laying there, probably everything's cool. But if a cat's zipping around, for a lot of those dogs, you'd be like, boom, right? Wouldn't it kick in that drive?
Yes, it does, and for a lot of them, it just can't be overcome, and we recognize that right away.
Sure.
You know, my 11-year-old boy, he thinks that cats are walking Big Macs. He will eat them. My little girl, she's fine with them. She doesn't care at all.
Right.
So it depends on the personality of the dog.
Yeah.
They all have a great prey drive, but it comes out differently in different animals. They all have their own individual personalities.
Okay, because I guess in their racing time, they have the drive, but then I guess I would have thought some of what goes on early on as they're being trained or they're getting started would be to sort of heighten that, because they're chasing that thing around the track. So, but even still, you're saying once they're retired, it's just more a matter of dog A versus dog B, how they're going to respond to small moving objects.
Absolutely. Greyhounds are sight hounds. They respond to movement. They've been doing it for, there's an argument, at least 3,000 years that we know. It could be as much as 5,000 or 6,000 years that this breed has been around. And they are sight hounds. They will respond. How they respond is different in different animals.
All right. Well, looks like we got at least one caller here. Let's take one of those calls right now. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Don Goldstein.
Hello.
Hello, it's you. Go ahead.
My name is David Wolf. I'm the director of the National Greyhound Adoption Program. In fact, your speaker today mentioned us as adopting from us early on. I think you really need to talk about what's going on in the Florida State Legislature right now.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get to that shortly in some detail. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm one of those people that is up on it and has been advocating for decoupling, and so your audience knows what decoupling is. Decoupling is the ability of a track to cease live racing but continue doing the other things that they do that make money. Half of the tracks in Florida lose money. All of the tracks in Florida are subsidized by the state of Florida. The tracks literally give state almost no money each year. About $1.2 million is what they give after they get either a $350,000 or a $500,000 credit. You have a track like Melbourne that has a total handle of $167,000 for their full season. Pardon the expression, they lose their A. But they're all staying in the business of paramutual whatever, card playing right now, or in the case of Hollywood / the Mardi Gras, they have slot machines. So they're making money.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the people that have slot machines, all of those entities, whether it be horse racing, high life, or greyhound racing in two cases, bring the state a sum of $153 million a year currently. And greyhound racing costs the state somewhere between $3 and $6 million. Yesterday, Senator Sachs introduced an amendment to a injury reporting bill that was a little bit complex because it wanted to give something to everybody to appease everybody, and there was an uproar there from the breeders and the kennel operators, and she pulled that amendment off the table because she thought it was going to be defeated, and it probably would have been. But this is the most important thing that we should be talking about right now, is giving those tracks the ability to decouple, because they're losing money, the state is losing money, more dogs will die, more dogs will be injured, and it is not a viable industry for many of the tracks any longer.
Right, I think, and I'm sorry, was it David? Or we're absolutely going to get in that. And if you'll pardon me, I think you're just sort of on a shaky cell, so if you don't mind, I think we're going to move on so we can hear Don, who was actually at those hearings and knows exactly what went down yesterday and why the decoupling bill was pulled, and that's a key core of today's conversation, so we will get into that, but it's just a little shaky with your cell connection.
Who does she represent?
Who does who represent?
The next speaker.
It's Don Goldstein.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if she was at the hearings, she'll know that...
It's a he. It's the guest we've been speaking with, sir.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. He knows that there were very few advocates there, and there were a lot of kennel people, and there were a lot of breeders there, and they made themselves heard very vocally, and most adoption people are afraid to speak out about what truly goes on in greyhound racing because they'll get thrown out of the track as soon as they do.
Right. Well, that's among the reasons I invited Don and Great overall here is because unlike many greyhound organizations, they are not racing neutral or whatever the gussied up term is, and so that's why we were here to have some honest conversation. So again, feel free to keep listening, but I am going to move on just so we don't have the kind of bad cell connection any further. Thank you very much for your call.
You're welcome. Bye
bye.
David's comments are well taken. I'd like to point out, by the way, that the numbers he was giving are from what's called the Spectrum Study. It was a study that was initiated by the State Senate Gaming Committee, and that is primarily where all of these numbers come from. Yes, at the committee hearing yesterday, we were badly outnumbered. My guess is about 5-1. There were just under 20 Greyhound advocates there, including myself. And I was scheduled to speak, David, but when Senator Sachs pulled the decoupling amendment, those appearance cards were not responded to just because that amendment no longer existed. So there were several of us that were scheduled to speak. It's not that we're afraid to speak. We were not given the opportunity yesterday.
Right. And I guess to elaborate on it, as you were explaining before we went on air, Don, is that the people that were there to speak, as Don was and others, you indicate beforehand what specific issue in some cases you are there to speak on. So if you had indicated decoupling, as Don and many others did, once that was pulled, then the opportunity to speak, of course, was no longer available. But while we're on this, we sort of jumped ahead of where I was planning to go with the conversation, but that's fine. So let's talk more about yesterday, because there was sort of mixed results, but there were certainly some good things that happened yesterday. So let's talk about those. And let me just again remind people who might just be tuning in or may not have heard initially. My guest is Don Goldstein of Greyhound Rescue and Adoptions of Tampa Bay, or GREAT is the acronym. So again, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org or texting 813-433-0885. And as we've mentioned now once or two times, Don was actually at the racing committee meeting yesterday, so can report on exactly what went down.
Yeah, the good news is that the underlying bill that was being discussed yesterday, which was Greyhound Injury Reporting Requirement, was passed. It was passed handily. It was 13-1 was the vote. And the only senator that voted against it happened to be my senator, Senator Tom Lee. And he voted against it by his own comments because it did not go far enough. He's very much an advocate of Greyhounds, which we greatly appreciate. But they did have to pull that amendment. It was unlikely to pass. And rather than jeopardize the Greyhound reporting bill to get the decoupling, they ended up pulling the decoupling amendment. That does not mean that it's a dead issue. We are hopeful that it will be reintroduced. The Greyhound Injury Reporting Bill has at least two more committees to go through, and then the floor. So we have three more opportunities to see that amendment, maybe in a better form, come back in before this bill is considered by the floor.
Okay, and that brings to a few questions, including one I actually want to sort of step backwards in a way, just because David sort of jumped right into decoupling. I think a lot of people listening just might not be all that familiar with the concept. So maybe if you wouldn't mind, Don, just taking a moment and explaining what decoupling really means and then what the implications are, since that's kind of critical to at least this part of our conversation.
Sure. In 1996, when the Florida legislature when Florida allowed card rooms and other forms of gambling, in some cases slot machines as well, to go into existing pari-mutuel facilities, meaning horse tracks, dog tracks, or frontons. The law said that they had to maintain the same number of races, or at least 90% of the same number of races that they were conducting in 1996 when this was allowed. They still have to do that. But since 1996, the number of people that are watching the dog races has gone down considerably. We don't know the attendance because that doesn't have to be reported. But we do know that the pari-mutuel take has gone down somewhere between 67% and 92%. It has gone down significantly, which means the revenue to the state of Florida has gone down. David alluded to the fact that the state of Florida is supporting greyhound racing. It costs more in regulation than they receive in taxes and fees. The Spectrum study said somewhere between $1 and $3.3 million subsidy, direct subsidy, to the greyhound racing industry.
So let's pause there, just because that's a pretty striking number. And again, I guess for some people it would be very counterintuitive, right? So we're spending that kind of money to keep the racing industry going because there's the requirement from 96 that to do what happens at those tracks, a certain number of races have to be maintained at whatever ratio or figure level they're at the time this was set in 96.
That's correct.
Seems like just in that one sentence or a sentence and a half, there's a lot of puzzling things there. But I think what even if you don't care about dogs and what happens to the dogs, just on a financial, like out of your pocket basis, as a Florida resident and taxpayer, that would be sort of like, hey, there's something amiss here.
Yes. How many teachers or police officers would that $3 million buy? And we're subsidizing a dying industry. People are not going to the tracks to bet on the dogs. They're going to the tracks to play cards. And I just don't think it's logical to me to have greyhounds racing, dying, injured, to allow people to play poker. That just doesn't make sense. That business model doesn't make sense.
And isn't it really, at this point, kind of true that the people that own and operate those tracks feel much the same way?
Yes, the track owners would just as soon do away with decoupling. It forces them to have a bad business model. They're forced to lose money in order to make money. That doesn't make sense.
Meaning they're forced to offer X amount of races, of dog races, so that they can keep the cards and the video poker and whatever else is going on afloat by those legal requirements.
One of the tracks that spoke yesterday, as a matter of fact, the gentleman said that of the 12 tracks currently operating in Florida, and by the way, there's only 20 tracks operating in the United States, and we have 12 of them in Florida. And he mentioned that there's only 3 tracks, not 6 like David mentioned. He said there's only 3 tracks that are making money.
We're going to sort of, I guess, bounce around chronologically. It's my own fault, but having taken that call, we're sort of spinning ahead and sort of going back and sort of fleshing out some of the details. So decoupling was pulled yesterday to many people's great disappointment. But again, as it stood before it was pulled, it was problematic, even if there was a glitch that was maybe inadvertent or just hadn't been caught. But that would have sent the whole thing down in flames, as I understand it, if it hadn't been pulled off the floor.
That's the probability. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is the likelihood with the remaining, 3 weeks or so of the session of it being fixed and presented again before the session ends?
Well, let's talk, the good news is that we did get Greyhound injury reporting through. That's very positive in every state that has required that. And by the way, we are only one of 2 states that do not require that. There are 7 racing states, and us in Alabama, Florida and Alabama, are the only 2 states that do not require the reporting of injuries due to racing. So that's very, very positive. The chances of decoupling getting added back in, we're very hopeful. There is a lot of support from a lot of legislators, both in the Senate and the House. We are fairly confident, we are confident that if it gets to the floor, we would win both decoupling and injury reporting.
Okay, great. So it sounds like there's reasons for optimism, even within the remaining session.
Yes,
that the decoupling could get pushed through.
We are hopeful. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Let's, while we're at this, Don, maybe what we should do is see where people could get information that are hearing about this maybe for the first time or would want to help push the decoupling through. So is there an overall website or somewhere where people could go and find out how to contact their particular representative or someone else that would sort of be good to hear from them to help push this forward and raise awareness and just make those politicians even more likely to get it through before the end of the session?
Gray2kusa.org. www.gray2kusa.org is one of the best sources of information. They have a whole fact sheet on the Florida legislative situation right now. It's extensive. It's updated frequently. It's online.
Right. And also on a related note, as I put this in both in a newsletter and a link to it in at least one of my Facebook posts about this morning's show, is they also have a great grid of information with those gaming committee members' names, phone numbers, and email addresses. So again, you can just go to gray2kusa.org, and it's pretty easy to find that information on their website. And again, if you can contact those folks and let them know how important you think this is.
And thank them for passing through the Greyhound injury reporting bill. We were very pleased with that.
Right. So we're going to take at least one of our callers here, and then we're going to come back to injuries and unfortunately deaths, which all sort of figures into this. So hi, you're on Talking Animals with Don Goldstein.
Hello. Do you have me again? It's David Wolf.
Oh, okay, David. Okay.
I was listening to what Don was saying, but people can also go on our website because we've written many, many articles, ngap.org.
Okay.
ngap.org.
Okay.
We must have a half a dozen articles regarding decoupling as well as phone numbers for all of the Senate legislators. And certainly if you wanted the full list, you could contact her office and we could give you the full list of all of the legislators in Florida. We've been sending out mass mailings to every legislator to tell them how important this is and vote on the humane issue and the humane aspect as well as the economic one for the state and pass decoupling.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, David. Okay, hi, you're on Talking Animals with Don Goldstein.
Hello, hi. My name is Steffi, and I'm a student at USF, and I had a link from Facebook from Grade 2K giving me all the phone numbers to the senators and the chairs in the Florida legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that post, I was able to call and try to advocate. So I know Facebook is social media, whatever. I don't know how important that is, but it worked. And I think I got a few friends to also call and try to help for
that's great.
Password decoupling. So I don't know. That's really cool. I'm really glad you're doing that. And I think there's a lot of people that are behind, animal rights, just helping everything. So
That's great, Steffi. Well, I hope in light of what we're talking about today that you'll further share that information, the great 2K list and with other friends and anything else you can do to help get people to make those calls. Because again, we just really want to push this through in the remaining 3 weeks. So.
And please watch the social media, Duncan site, our site. We are also on Facebook under the name of Great, G-R-E-A-T. And as these bills go forward in both houses, we would love your support again and again and again. We appreciate your time.
So keep up the good work, Steffi. Thanks for calling and thanks for contacting those folks. And yeah, keep spreading the word if you could on Facebook and elsewhere.
Absolutely. Have a good day, guys.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, this is a little circuitous, but we're getting there. So let's talk about the reports that surfaced earlier in the year about the dramatic, I don't think there's any other word really than that, number of Greyhound deaths at tracks. Specifically, I guess the first thing I saw that really put it in kind of a fairly jarring context was that over the course of 7 months, 74 Greyhounds had died. Again, for those of us who just might find the whole realm of dog racing to be foreign territory, can you explain what these numbers mean and how they happened?
Until recently, the middle of last year, the Greyhound industry did not have to report deaths in Florida due to racing. Middle of last year, that reporting requirement went into effect. The first 7 months, there were 74. We're up to now nearly 100 Greyhounds have died since the middle of last year as a direct result of racing. It works out to about one Greyhound every 3 days is dying as a result of racing. That's why we think injury reporting is so critical as well. We think once that transparency goes into effect, once they have to report the injuries, what's happened in other states where this has occurred is both the injuries and the deaths have very quickly declined and declined dramatically to the point of around 50%.
So as with virtually everything, you know, whether the world of animals and what's how they're exploited or not, and worlds outside of that, it all comes down to money, right? So can you explain sort of the economics? Because, again, this sort of connects to what you were explaining earlier about what was established in 1996, and so the kind of the in many cases large number of races that are sort of must be conducted at these tracks, but meanwhile they're losing money on this. So people being what they are in certain realms, good businessmen, quote unquote. So conditions are diminished. Vet care is diminished if offered at all, etc. So is that? I mean, what else accounts for? I mean, that's just the number of deaths. I don't care who you are, it would have to sort of blow your mind, especially if you're just hearing it today for the first time.
It's staggering to think that these wonderful, kind animals are dying so that people can play poker. It makes no sense to me. But yeah, as the take goes down, as the people betting on the dogs diminish, and as the amount of money diminishes, where's the money coming from? Or what are they spending on? They're not spending it on upkeep of the kennels. We know that the kennel situations in some of the tracks is degrading rapidly. There was a gentleman in South Florida several weeks ago that was arrested for falsifying vaccine certificates. He was signing rabies vaccine certificates using the name of a dead veterinarian. They're cutting corners where they can, and this is not industry-wide, and please don't take it that way.
Yeah.
There are many good track operators. There are many good greyhound owners out there. There's many good kennel operators. But not all of them.
Right. And really, as we've already established before, many, maybe even most, you could say possibly, of these track operators would be happy to not have greyhound racing anymore.
Why would anybody want to lose money?
Yeah.
The track operators themselves would love
it's to. It's not like they're clinging furiously to a great source of income. It's the reverse is true.
That's
right?
Absolutely, yeah. Right. And many of them have said that they would continue to operate greyhound racing, just at a reduced schedule.
Okay, so, yeah, so, but that's where, again, the decoupling really is going to turn this around for everybody.
It's going to make the industry make sense.
Yeah.
We think that, you know, there will be a lot more dogs available for adoption. Some of the organizations that are kind of going the same direction we are afraid of that. We think that we can find homes, and we have successfully done that in the past. We have people from many, many states up north and out west that are crying for dogs, greyhounds, to be adopted. We send them up north. We send them out west. This can be accomplished easily. We can find homes for these wonderful dogs.
As so many of these things are, and always trying to make things better for animals, it's steps. It's baby steps sometimes mm-hmm. it's larger steps. So can you further explain a little bit the importance of what did happen yesterday, what did get pushed through in terms of what injury reporting really does mean in the overall context of what we're discussing here?
Injury reporting, we don't know how many dogs are injured. I can tell you that of the 8 greyhounds that my wife and I adopted, quite a few of them have had broken legs. I have an 11.5-year-old right now that he broke his leg in his 105th race, and it was never repaired. He still limps, and that was, he was 3.5 in his last race. And that kind of brings me to another topic that is kind of close to my heart, and that's the overbreeding in the industry. That boy, my 11.5-year-old, after he broke his leg when he was 3.5, he was kept in a cage for the next 6 years breeding. He has 386 first-generation puppies. I have a 4-year-old whose father has 11,291 first-generation puppies, and his father, my pup's grandfather, has 11,001. So those two males bred 22,000 first-generation greyhounds. And they're breeding these dogs just in the hopes of getting one like my boy, who won more than half of his races. He had a phenomenal racing record. So they're just trying to get that one. But all those others, what happens to them?
Yeah. Well, this may take us back to where we were sort of before the first call came in, which is, again, really trying to discuss what's great about living with retired greyhounds. And so we talked about some of their great traits. One of our emailers, in fact, back then, and I should come back to this because we were talking about, thank you for your work on behalf of greyhounds. I long for the day when dog racing is obsolete/outlawed. Very happy to hear that greyhounds can potentially live among cats. How are they with horses?
Actually, we have one of our foster families. He has potbelly pigs. He has a number of different animals. With horses, again, it's a personality issue. We work very hard to make sure that we put the right greyhound into the right family situation. But I know of a couple of ours that have gone into large farm areas where there are horses, and they do just fine.
And so, and I would think kind of in just the most broad strokes fashion that an animal as big as a horse would just inherently not be an issue, but a small animal, cat, et cetera, or small dog even, that's what's going to activate that prey drive if that dog has that tendency.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Although the small dog and the cat don't necessarily go together. We have a lot of dogs that are fine, a lot of greyhounds that are just fine with small dogs that don't particularly care for cats.
But again, it's case by case, and plenty of greyhounds have been placed in plenty of homes with all kinds of other animals in those homes.
Birds, lizards.
Yeah.
I placed a greyhound in a family that had two lizards and a rat, you know?
Yeah. Because that's the thing I think you mentioned early on, and I just think, I mean, anytime I've ever hung out with any kind of greyhounds for any length of time, incredibly, incredibly sweet and gentle and docile. And so, yeah, like you say, you sort of have this image of racing greyhounds and sort of aggressive and fiery and whatever, but you see them just hanging out or walking with people who have them like you do, and they're just gentle. I mean, they're the ultimate gentle dog, it seems like.
They are, and if people are interested in meeting them in a good situation, at many of the pet stores around the Tampa Bay area on Saturdays, we bring our greyhounds so that people can actually interact with them. We'll have anywhere from 3 to 10 or 12 greyhounds at a pet store. You can get that schedule on our website, which is www.great-greyhound.org. There's a link on the left-hand side for our meet and greet schedule.
And again, there's also a link there to just go directly to their Facebook page that Don had mentioned as well. Yeah, so I mean, really, life with greyhounds is great, so to speak. And I mean, who better to speak to that than you with all the experience with all the dogs? So in the interest of full disclosure, for people listening, saying, "Oh, well, maybe so." I mean, is there anything else that's either tricky or complicated about life with the retired?
Yeah, good news. It's a kind of a good news, bad news situation. A lot of people think that you have to have a fenced yard or a large area.
Yeah.
We successfully place a lot of greyhounds into very small apartments. Again, they're used to living in a 2-foot by 3-foot by 3-foot cage.
Yeah.
So you put them in a 500-square-foot apartment, and they are in heaven, as long as they're with people. However, if you don't have a fenced yard, you have to walk them 4 or 5 times a day, and they must be on a leash. You can never have a greyhound outside of a fenced yard or a fenced area without being on a controlled leash. They are sight hounds. If they see something moving, they will chase it.
And on a related note, that reminds me, I think somewhere I read this in my head for some reason, are dog parks tricky or is that, again, dog by dog, case by case?
It's dog by dog. We're not big fans of we great are not big fans of dog areas because we don't trust the other dogs, quite frankly.
Okay.
For the most, greyhounds are not particularly aggressive, but some other dogs are. Greyhounds have pretty thin skin, quite frankly. Their skin is like tissue paper, and it tears fairly easily. It also heals pretty quickly, but we're not a big fan of dog parks.
Okay.
For that reason.
Sure. But there's plenty of other ways to just walk in dogs like most of us do or whatever. And again, if you have the right yard, let them have at it, right?
I will say that if you're a jogger, greyhound is probably not the right breed for you. Again, their races last 28 to 34 seconds. so unless you want to jog to the end of your driveway and back, that's about it.
Right, they're not
going to
hang
with
you. They
can be trained to jog, but it takes a long time.
Yeah, and they don't like it probably. Right?
Not particularly.
Yeah. So, all right, let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Don Goldstein.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you guys for your loving effort. And I just have a brief story, if I may. It's about my time in Memphis 17 years ago on a road trip.
Okay, if it's very brief, we're the end of our time, but by all means, if it's a quick one, sure.
Walking my pit bull mix on a leash on Beale Street, got pretty aggressively kicked off of Beale Street by the local constabulary. Evidently, no dogs were allowed, even though you know, I had her on a leash and everything. The next day in the park, a homeless man with several dogs who did tricks, and he was raising money for the Greyhound effort, he said. He had several dogs of his own in the park, homeless. And he told us that there was a facility out near the airport in Memphis where Greyhounds were euthanized en masse after they had finished racing them, and they were useless for racing anymore. And that, of course, was horrifying to us and didn't really have a way to document it, but being an animal lover, it was very disturbing, of course. And I had done the road trip from Toronto and ended up in St. Pete eventually, but what I've noticed is a really stark difference in the way that Northerners and Southerners seem to treat the domesticated animals. In the South, it seems like they're either for amusement, as in circus or racing or the zoo, and then, or to protect property. And
I'm very, very sorry to cut you off, but do you have a specific question or comment about greyhounds? Because we're way over time now. I'm very sorry, but we just don't have the time for the whole story at this point today. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, that is the story, and I'm thank you for your loving efforts.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. So, Don, we've been speaking once again with Don Goldstein from Greyhound Rescue and Adoptions of Tampa Bay. The acronym is GREAT. The website is great-greyhound.org. And from there, again, you can go to their very active GREAT Facebook page. So, Don, thank you once again for making the time to join us on Talking Animals and filling us in on all kinds of greyhound things, the good, the bad, the ugly. And we'll stay in touch with you, and hopefully we'll have some good news and maybe within 3 weeks' time.
Thank you for having us and helping to spread the word about these wonderful animals. We appreciate it, Duncan.
By all means. Thanks again. All right. So it's time now for that prize animal song I alluded to at the top of the show. Ray Wiley Hubbard will be performing at Spring Break this Friday, April 11th at Sertoma Ranch. And earlier that day, right here on WMNF in the Live Music Showcase. So perhaps in one or both shows, he'll play this one. It's Ray Wiley Hubbard with Snake Farm on Talking Animals. I think this song involves double entendre. Maybe it's just single.
Well, woman I love is her name Ramona. She kind of looks like Tempest Storm. She can dance like a little Egypt. She works down at the Snake Farm. Snake Farm, it just sounds nasty. Snake Farm. Pretty much is Snake Farm. It's a reptile house. Snake Farm. Ooh. Ramona's got a keen sense of humor. She got a tattoo down her arm. It's of a python eating a little mouse, wearing a sailor hat that says Snake Farm. Snake Farm, it just sounds nasty. Snake Farm, pretty much is Snake Farm. It's a reptile house. Snake Farm. Ugh. Ramona, how come she works there? She says, well, it's got its charm. There's nothing to do in the winter. Now then some kid gets bit at the Snake Farm. Snake Farm, it just sounds nasty. Snake Farm, it pretty much is. Snake Farm, it's a reptile house. Snake Farm. And a band from Wales that's called The Alarm. She said she cried when they broke up. She still plays the records at the Snake Farm. Snake Farm, it just sounds nasty. Snake Farm, pretty much is. Snake Farm, it's a reptile house. Snake Farm. We'll be right back. times Ramona calls me up and says, come on down here, it's getting warm. She runs everybody off and we, you know, it's a snake farm. Snake farm, it just sounds nice, just snake farm. It pretty much is. Snake farm, it's a reptile house. Snake farm, snake farm. It just sounds nasty, snake farm. It pretty much is. Snake farm, it's a reptile house. Snake farm.
All right, that's Ray Wiley Hubbard with Snake Farm. There'll be more where that came from this Friday, April 11th, when he performs on WNF in the live music studio at 1 p.m., followed by his show later that day at Spring Break at Sertoma Ranch. Right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. Comedy suffered yet another big loss over the weekend when John Bennett died at age 50. By the way, the headline in Huffington Post and elsewhere described John as Seinfeld comic, which, as others have pointed out, is a pretty huge disservice. For one thing, a zillion comics appeared on Seinfeld. For another, Bennett was a monster comic who, every time he took the stage, absolutely destroyed. He was also a sweet, sweet, lovely man. So this is John Bennett with part of a piece called Free Willy, which we pick up with Bennett at an all-you-can-eat sushi buffet where a seal has somehow turned up and eaten a lot of the food. On today's Comedy Corner, on Talking Animals.
But this seal ate buckets full. Buckets! The owner thought I was eating it all. I got yelled at again. This guy scared me, too. He reminded me of Lord Toranaga from Shogun.
Hey, you. Big boy. Come here. Wakarimasu ka? Hey, dozo.
That's Japanese. It means, you go now. Actually, you know what he said? He said, you eat like a free. You eat like free. You eat like Free Willy. The Japanese hate that movie. They can't pronounce it. Free Willy. Free Willy. They try to see it over here in the movie theaters. They couldn't get in. What movie, please? Two tickets for your weary. No, you have to pick a movie, sir. See the movies up here? For your weary. Pick a movie. For your weary. Weary. I have no idea what you're saying, sir. You're going to have to pick a movie. Feel weary. Feel weary is a fish. Like a flipper. You know flipper? But a bigger flipper. Bigger flipper. Weary. Step out of line, please. Feel weary. Oh, forget it. We see Die Hard with a vengeance.
All right. That was John Panette, the late, great John Panette. Rest in peace. I'm Duncan Strauss. We have just a couple minutes left of the show, so we won't have the full animal news and announcements. Want to quickly hit a couple of things coming up in the next few days that we can't carry over to next week. The rest we will. So one of those is a celebration of Pets Festival this Saturday, April 12th at Sarasota Fairgrounds, featuring food, games, giveaways. It's going on from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Music including the Crabgrass Cowboys, Yesterday's, and Blackthorn Rose. And again, you may bring your pets to this. So that sounds great. Also on the horizon is Petville Animal Shelter is having an open house April 15th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. So after you file your taxes, you can go right to that. There's tours of the shelter, a puppy love registration table, volunteer sign-up table, door prizes, beverages, snacks, and wine after 5. That's at Petville Animal Shelter in St. Pete. You can find out more by going to petvilleanimalshelter.com. All right, the rest we will get into much more with more time next week, presumably. So anyway, it's time now to play Name That Animal Tune in our remaining second. Let's start into that. Do not need to be a Dubbin member, though you should be. And there'll be a prize, a pass for a tour of Big Cat Rescue. The first person to call is 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We'll take the guesses, of course, off the air because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. We'll be back next Wednesday, April 16th, when my guest will be Scott Trebatusky, Director of Pet Resource Division of Hillsborough County. That's highly similar to the job previously known as Director of Animal Services. He'll join me in studio. We'll cover all sorts of ground, take your calls, emails, texts, and more. So that's next Wednesday here on Talking Animals. And the rest you can just find at talkinganimals.net. Have a good week. It's WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening.